that driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
She got it. Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, and anyone in between, welcome back to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. We have a tremendous show coming up tonight. It is Arch Madness Week. The madness is in the air. The calendar has flipped from February to March, and the chaos is just about to begin. The Missouri Valley Conference setting things off. Welcome in to the show. I'm Leo Stauder, your sports director here at 103.3 WZND, and we are in triple threat formation, but with a little bit of a different look. We'll get into that in a second. Our regular co-host, as always, back from his fact-finding mission, is Mr. Joey Dwyer of WZND's production department of the Quad City Storm. Welcome back, Joey.
Hey, thank you so much. And fun fact for all the people at home, I'm working the board tonight. So it feels real good. It feels real good to have my hand on the switches.
So if things do go wrong, that's who you blame. That's Joey Dwyer there. His phone number is.
You know, I'd be impressed, though, if you had my phone number right off the top.
Oh, no chance. We're good friends, Joey, but I wouldn't say we're friends like that.
We're not memorized phone number friends.
No. But who is in this day and age? And the third voice, who we haven't revealed yet, is. And do we want to?
Let's do it. Breaking news.
Yeah. I think this is the first that's been reported, but the next WZND sports director, should we say who it is, or should we just let him talk in like a fake voice? It's Mr. Mikey Fernelli from Cary Grove, Illinois, of WZND's News and Sports Department, of the Vedette, and of TV10's Weather Department, I guess.
Meteorology, I guess.
Welcome to the show, Mikey, and congratulations on this honor of keeping the legacy of sports directors at WZND going.
Thank you, Leo. That was a Woj bomb here live on the show to announce that. And yeah, it's a couple days old.
No backing out now.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm thrilled and I'm excited to be here on the show just a couple days after that announcement came out for this special edition of the show.
And Mikey did mention it is a very special edition tonight because, as I was teasing there, it's Arch Madness. We have the Redbirds versus the Sycamores coming up at 6 o'clock. We have a basketball-heavy show coming up tonight. We're going to be doing some Redbird recap. This is where we might get a little off basketball because we're going to talk some baseball and some women's basketball, too. Then in the second segment, Mikey and the guys, we're going to preview some of the matchup tonight, talk about the Redbird basketball season. And then for the third segment, we're going to have a special guest, someone that I know pretty well, Mr. Brandon Vickery of Valparaiso's athletic department. He's going to be coming on talking about Arch Madness from a different perspective. So it's kind of cool to get to hear Brandon on the show to talk about something, hear from somebody other than Illinois State, maybe what he thinks a little bit about it, some of his times. And then we're going to call in to the guys at Arch Madness. We're going to hear from Joe Kennedy, Andrew Avola, and the rest of the crew that we sent there and get this night started on the right foot. So it's going to be a great show, guys.
Very, very excited. So are we starting with the hoops? With the women's hoops, though?
Yeah, let's start with that because this was they're on a bit of a tough stretch here, and it didn't really get much better this weekend. They've been putting together a tough skid when they were storming out the gate to start this season, and now after some tough losses to Drake, to Missouri State, to Southern Illinois, their future is in a much trickier spot. I think, Joey, we were kind of joking because we were in charge of putting together plans for the postseason tournament, saying, well, the guys in St. Louis are going to have a short stay, but we're going to be staying in the Quad Cities all weekend. Now it's looking a little trickier here with the women's team.
And so, Leo, you mentioned it. They just went on this four-game skid. Before this, they were solidly in first place. And to their credit, most of these teams they played are up towards the top of the valley.
Of course.
You had Southern Illinois, who is the top right now, Missouri State, who's in second, and UNI, who's in third. But then the game that really makes me worried is this Drake game. So the women's team went up to Des Moines to play against Drake last Friday. And Drake put up 55 or 45 points on him. It was 104 to 62. And I don't even know, because even in the other losses, like, they kept it marginally close.
Yeah.
But this game, start to finish, was just an absolute nightmare situation for the Birds. And it really exposed a lot of defensive issues for them.
And that's what's interesting about it, is because that's what, when Coach Gillespie came in, she was known for her defense. Because they lacked some finishing pieces in those early squads that were kind of the underdogs in the Valley, but they played really good defense. So now to see them give up 104, that is very surprising. And the fact they scored 62 points in that game and still weren't even close to winning, that's troubling there.
Right, because when you look at the other scores that they've put up, like 62 points is pretty on par for what they're able to accomplish offensively against these really good teams. Like, they beat Loyola with 57 points. So they're always somewhere within that high 50 to low 70 range, and usually that works for them because, like you said, Coach Gillespie's teams always have very good have a good defensive pedigree.
Yeah.
But over the past four games, we've seen that slip, and this team doesn't have the offensive firepower to shoot with 104 points.
Yeah, and I think what's troubling a little bit is in the Drake game, Juju Redmond got 11 points. So when Juju's not getting her points, I think that sets everybody else back a little bit. And then Mary Crompton's been on a skid as well. She was scoreless against Drake, had 3 points against Missouri State, and only 8 against Southern Illinois. So when she's your second option that isn't getting her points, that's where I think a little bit of this trouble comes from, is you're not getting the top end scoring from your two best players.
I mean, like you said, Leo, you can rely all you want on Juju Redmond and Deanna Wilson, but there was that game midseason where they dropped for a combined 50-plus points, and they still lost. Yeah. The next game, they were home against Drake. You know, we talk about Drake already, but don't confuse the two games. This one, they won at home, and Deanna and Juju had a decent amount of points, but they relied on the bench, specifically from behind the arc. Looking at the box score from this game, they lost by 40 points in Des Moines. That's going to be like, you know, 11 points for Juju, 10 points for Wilson, and then the bench itself is going to be Kale Newland is the only one with 10 points, and everyone else has either like 4 or 5. So if you're not going to have all those points from Deanna and Juju, you need that bench to be more important on offense.
And one of the problems with this Redbirds women's team, and they're very, very good. They're the best basketball team on campus, no doubt about it. But when you look at that team, Fernelli, you're talking about it, they need that bench scoring. That's not their strength. Their strength is their big three of Deanna Wilson, Juju Redmond, and Mary Crompton. And those are the players they rely on, for better or for worse. And then when it's for worse is when those players are putting up 6 to 10 points a night, and then you don't have that bench who can consistently put up those points. So you need those three players to really produce offensively.
And I think one thing that, you know, talking about depth scoring, they've been without Jada Stinson for much of this season. She's been dealing with an injury. She played for Team Puerto Rico in the Olympics, somebody that you were counting on coming in and being another one of those top-end scorers, and you've been out without her services. It kind of puts everybody else, slots them up a notch a little bit, and she's kind of was supposed to absorb that role that Tarion Moore vacated when she transferred. So you had somebody coming in that you thought was going to pick up some of those points, and now they've been hurt. Obviously, injuries are a part of college basketball, but it's that next person up mentality that I think is where they've been struggling a little bit.
And so the Redbirds are basically locked into the fourth seed as of right now. They could potentially, it looks like they could potentially jump Northern Iowa, but Northern Iowa is playing right now against Indiana State, and then they have a game against Evansville. And unless they lose both of those, the Birds are locked into the fourth seed with one game remaining. So that means they would play Loyola in the first round on Friday at Hoops in the Heartland. They beat them. They beat Loyola at home and on the road this season. So not a terrible first round matchup, but certainly not the one you were expecting to have coming in.
And, you know, we've been pretty negative in this segment about the team, but, you know, I think this could be maybe that stretch that fires them up a little bit, where they faced some adversity. They had a target on their backs for much of the season, and teams caught up to them. Teams knocked them off that pedestal a little bit. So they have to take this with a chip on their shoulder and now reclaim all that hype they had early in their season. I think this could be the motivation they need at the right time, right before the conference tournament, to get their season back on track. We'll see how they respond to that.
And it's not like this team is not talented. They have so many weapons that if they're clicking at the right time, I don't think there's a team in the Valley that can beat them. It's just all about putting the pieces together as soon as they can, because time is running out.
And time is certainly running out. Time is also running out of this segment, so I wish we could go a little longer, but we have to take a break to keep the rest of this show on track. But we will have coverage of Hoops in the Heartland when Coach Gillespie's squad heads to Moline. Joey and I will be there bringing that to you next weekend for as long as it lasts. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking some March Madness. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, and Mikey Frinelli. And all my excitement in the last segment, I forgot we still have some ISU baseball to talk about. I was just ready to move on to hoops, but we're keeping things here on the diamond because baseball, they had themselves quite the weekend. Mikey's our baseball beat reporter, so this is a little bit of his wheelhouse. So tell us about what happened with the Birds last week against West Carolina.
I mean, how can you not be excited about Redbirds baseball right now? Because there's two big reasons. I mean, one, they beat Arkansas to open the season, and now they're on a three-game win streak after last weekend. And two, the state of the MLB is kind of up in the air, so you have to watch something kind of baseball this season. And what better than college baseball, especially the Birdies? ISU baseball had a great series last weekend against Western Carolina, specifically from Ryan McCaw, who became the first Redbird since 2018 to hit three home runs in three straight games.
And McCaw is one of those guys where he was kind of like found money last season, where because that first base spot, they were trying a few different guys in there. They were trying Jack Butler. He was playing all over the place, but he played it for parts of the season. Nick Guile played there a little bit, Tyson Hayes, but then McCaw just finally got that look and ran away with it. He displayed maybe a little more power than we were expecting from him and just was kind of that pleasant surprise out of last season and now has been living up to that hype going into this season. And it's just pretty cool to see because between him and Cermak, they have some pop in those bats at the top of the lineup.
And the pitching has also been excellent for this team. And when we talk some ISU baseball a couple weeks ago, we talked about how usually college is a little bit more of a hitter's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Certainly. And you still see runs that the Birds are giving up. But honestly, like the game where they've given up the most runs was at Western Carolina. They gave up 8 runs, but it doesn't really matter when you score 14.
Right. And I'd say the rotation, I feel a lot, it's been 6 games, but I feel a lot more confident in the rotation than we did last year because you have 3 defined pitchers. It's not like you're trying a few different guys like they were last year, and they've all really performed so well so far. Jordan Lussier, he's that guy at the top of the rotation. I'd compare him to like a Kyle Hendricks type where he can really pitch for contact, keep the ball on the ground, and with the solid infield the Redbirds have, that's fine because the defense is going to back it up. And then Derek Salata can really make the gun pop. Putting him as the 2 or your 3, that's very good. Making that transition from bullpen to starter seamlessly. I mean, he was a starter in high school, so he's done that before. And then Sean Sinisco was someone that was a little inconsistent last season, but really performed this weekend against Western Carolina. Threw 6 innings of 1-run ball, only 4 hits, and struck out 4. So when you're getting that production out of your number 3 guy, that's huge.
And I think Derek Salata might be the one I'm most excited about coming into the season because their most recent game against South Carolina, not South Carolina.
Western Carolina.
Western Carolina, thank you. he had 7 strikeouts in 5 2/3 innings. Like Leo said, he really makes the gun pop. And also, he's got a great strikeout pitch, which I think is really something that the Birds could use a lot more of coming out of the bullpen. Somebody who can just come out and retire guys, but you don't have to have him out of the bullpen if you got a guy who can do that going 6-plus innings.
And I mean, that was kind of their problem last year was outside of Colton Johnson, really didn't have a starter that could throw over 90 consistently. And now Salata's that guy that could do that to start games off. I mean, you want to talk about guys coming out of the pen. We saw it. We talked about it a little bit that it might happen on the last show. Ryan Cermak came out of the pen, and I can't remember if it was Friday or Saturday, but he went through a scoreless inning. So that was pretty cool to see, taking your best defensive player and then putting him on the mound. That's something Coach Holmes been teasing for a while, and he finally did it. There might be a method to his madness with that.
Ryan Cermak's like that one dude you play with in Little League who can play literally anywhere, and like the coach has to like limit his playing time because he's so good. Like, I mean, we've all had that guy, but that's in Little League. This is college baseball,
yeah.
And this guy is so good. And kind of like you're saying, kind of not to go back on it too much, Leo, but like you said, these Redbird pitchers are really dominant so far, especially against high-ranked teams like Arkansas. But they're not necessarily fanning batters either. They're making Kyle Soberano and Jake McCaw work, and it's kind of working.
Yeah, I think that's what you almost have to do a little bit, especially in college ball, where if you don't have that velocity, don't try to throw around the strike zone. If you can pitch for strikes, pitch for contact, I think that's an art that's kind of been lost. Everybody gets so caught up in velocity and all this different stuff, just being able to try to reach back and throw as hard as you can. But if you can pitch for contact, if you have good infielders, it's still a reliable thing. I mean, Mark Burley's one of the best to ever pitch like that, and he couldn't throw over 90, but he had a borderline Hall of Fame career just by being able to trust his defense. And I think that's, you kind of have to simplify the game like that as a college pitcher.
And so moving on in the season for the Birds, they've got some more pretty marquee matchups before they get into conference play. One big one is their first home series against Purdue, where they'll split two games here in Normal and then two games in West Lafayette. Yeah. And then a couple more big matchups, Kansas, Illinois, and then you get Dallas Baptist as well, who are no slouches. So a very tough schedule for the Birds this season, but so far they've really made the most of it.
And, I mean, that's talking to – I interviewed Kyle Soberano on TV10. Coach Holm talked about it in his media day. They think the Valley is so competitive, that's not a guarantee you're going to win the Valley postseason tourney. So you need to up your RPI index, make sure your strength of schedule is so good that they could still get an at-large bid, because for a mid-major team, it's hard to do that. So especially with having Dallas Baptist in the Valley, it's going to be tough to get that win the conference tournament. So you have to make sure you're doing the best you can non-conference to prepare yourself for that. And I think they can. I think this weekend's test against Arkansas State, fans might remember they played up here at Duffy Bass last season. That was a program that I felt that was very similar to the Redbirds, like another type of mid-major, but more in the South. And so seeing how they stack up against them this weekend should be a good measuring stick of where they are against other teams that might be likely to get an at-large bid.
And ISU baseball has always had ISU baseball, especially under Coach Holm, has always had this process of they get these guys while they're young, they develop them into very good players, and then they're able to replace them in the system. And we're seeing a lot of that this year with all these different guys stepping up. And so I think that as we head through the month of March, we're really going to see this team start to click even more.
I mean, it's crazy to think that a team that lost Jack and Joe Butler, that lost both of their catchers that were both solid players, that lost Jordan Libman, those are like your marquee names, lost Colton Johnson, one of the top pitchers in ISU history, and they're still maybe probably going to be even better this year because of guys like Ryan Cermak and Kyle Soberano and Jake McCaw. And just, it's crazy because now this is really the first team that's all of Coach Holmes' guys in his fourth year. And that he's just what he was able to do with the guys he inherited in the program compared to now where he's got his whole staff in. He's been able to shape the program the way he wants. I'm really excited. I mean, I want to see my White Sox play this year, but like, I'm going to get my baseball fix. I'm going to be able to watch the Birds in the spring, going to see the Oilmen in the summer. Like, I'll get some good baseball in here, but I'm just stoked for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great time. We'll talk about it on a future show, but it's might be a little better than the softball product this year because they lost a couple of players, but that's for a different show. We'll get to that eventually.
And we will get to that eventually. When we come back, though, we're taking things to the hardwood. It's officially Arch Madness time. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hey, you. I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to the Red Zone only on 103.3 WZND.
That was Dan Muller, someone that maybe he's in St. Louis. We don't really know what he's up to this week, but someone that is not with his team currently in St. Louis, but the team is in St. Louis. We have boots on the ground in St. Louis. We got Andrew Avola, Joe Kennedy, the rest of the guys are there, but we're going to do a little bit of a preview here because this is an awesome time of the year. And regardless of how you feel about how this basketball season went, I think when it turns into March, you believe anything can happen here. And we're going to get into that a little bit because Redbird basketball, it was a season, let's say that.
It was. They played a full season of basketball.
Yeah. You could say maybe they exceeded expectations. You could also say maybe the expectations we had were too low, and so it didn't take much to exceed them, but here they are. I think we're in a weird spot because there was growth. There were some things to be happy about this season, but how much of it matters now because of the situation they're in, because of the coaching change? It's just feels like the weirdest spot we've ever ended a season with in Redbird men's basketball, and there's a chance they could still win their game tonight.
Yeah, it's certainly an odd season. I think you alluded to it pretty well there, Leo, but it really didn't give me a whole lot of hope going into the postseason tournament. Antonio Reeves has been absolutely incredible all season long, and I honestly feel bad for him because he deserves to be on a team that's contending for a championship, and that is basically the furthest thing from what the Birds are right now. And some of that is their fault roster wise. Some of it, like Cy Chapman getting hurt, that's not something you can plan for.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just I the it's almost like I don't want them to win tonight. And I do, yeah. Right? But I don't want them to win tonight only to get absolutely rocked tomorrow, you know, like lose to UNI by 40.
Because in looking at the numbers of the season, 12-19, 5-13 in conference, 11-6 at home, that's a good stat. But then this is what bothers me, 1-11 on the road and 0-2 at neutral sites. It's just hard to make heads or tails of this season because of just some of the underlying things like that, where they were very good at Redbird Arena. And then looking at some of these 12 wins, when you're beating teams like Bucknell and Purdue Northwest and teams that aren't maybe Division I caliber to beef you up to those 12 wins, it's where do we actually stand on how this season? Would you rate it a success or a failure? Mikey, you've been kind of quiet over here. We're going to put you on the spot here.
How I see success in this situation, like my expectation going into the season was I want to build any consistency, and then we can know that they have some kind of success. And the moment I knew that they were going to just be completely inconsistent again was when we won at home against Missouri State to start off the Missouri Valley season. I think it was like December 2nd or 3rd, and then lost to Chicago State at home like 2 days later in like a terrible game for the Redbirds. They did not show any more consistency than years past. And Mueller said it. Jones says it now. They always just go, oh, we have to get more consistent. How does that happen then? Is it going to all change when they get a magic coaching change and all of a sudden this coach teaches them how to play consistently?
I think it's a combination of the coaching and the recruiting, because there have been consistent ISU teams under Dan Mueller where they had very good players, but the players that are here now are – We complain about this all the time, but you cannot get guys who are going to be here for a year and then expect the team to have this identity and have this culture and be able to build upon their previous years, because half of your team leaves after 1 year.
Dan was bragging about the culture almost in the preseason press conference. He was like, oh, considering how many players we lost, I think our guys are brothers and stuff like that. But how do we know that's true?
Mikey, that's the thing, is he's saying, considering all the players that we lost, that is the situation every year. It's been that way for the past three years, is they've never been able to build on any kind of momentum, because as soon as you do, all of your good players, with the exception of Antonio Reeves, he's the only one, everybody else leaves.
And even Reeves was kind of a wild card going in this year, too. He tested the waters of the NBA, and it's troubling because not every school in the Valley does this. You see schools in the Valley that can grow a team over the course of 4 years. And so I don't know. We don't have the magic answer for that, how that's going to happen. But there were definitely some good moments from the season. I mean, a lot of these home games were fun to watch. When they went on the road, that's where things got shaky. But I think as long as we could look at that game against Valparaiso, that overtime game, I'll look at that as a special one. How you came back from, what was it, the fourth largest deficit in school history, 16 points, forced that game into overtime, got the win. Antonio Reeves essentially took it over. Like, it wasn't the season we wanted, but there were still moments from it that I think I can look back and be like, that was fun. Like, at least they were bad, but they weren't Evansville bad, I guess we could say.
Yikes. Year. Okay, so talking about the rest of the Valley, because it is Arch Madness starts tonight. We sleep in May, boys. the first conference all-team, or first team all-conference, and Coach of the Year came out. Coach of the Year, Ben Jacobson from UNI, and then the team included A.J. Green of UNI, along with four of the players. One player not mentioned, Antonio Reeves, which it hurts, because he was truly, for most of the season, the only light for ISU, and for him to not get that recognition kind of stings a little bit.
You guys have said it on the show so many times about different sports, the MLB, the NFL. If you're considered to be a most valuable player in your league, you have to consider, where would your team be without you? The Redbirds would be nowhere without Antonio Reeves.
They'd be Evansville bad.
Yeah, all the games that Leo mentioned, and even more than that, the Valpo win, the close Drake loss, the close UNI loss, the Bradley win at home, those were all the common denominator is Antonio Reeves took over in the final 10 minutes. It's insane how much he just has that ability just to turn it on. It's like a video game.
And that's where I think maybe the voters lost the mindset a little bit, where you're looking at some of the best players on the best teams. Like, Terry Roberts was a good player, don't get me wrong. That's the one where I look at where I wish Reeves was in that spot, because when we saw him play, Kendall Lewis shut him down. He went scoreless in the second half of a game where his team needed him, where Reeves, on the other hand, elevated his game in the second half. Like, that's the game I point to for why Reeves should be on it over him, because when the game mattered most, who was the player you noticed on the floor?
And when you look at this all-team, first-team all-conference, you have A.J. Green, makes sense. Yes. He's the best player on the best team of the conference. You have Missouri State, Isaiah Mosley, Gage Prim. Both incredible. They are the reason
the best of their position.
They are. They are. And they're the reason that Missouri State is up there. I think that they might be a little too reliant on those two players, and I think that's going to show in the tournament.
Okay.
But that's just my prediction. Lucas Williamson, we saw him for Loyola, and he is Leo, I think you said it perfectly. He is very good at basketball.
Yeah, exceptional.
But the whole Terry Roberts thing is he a transformative talent? Does Terry Roberts elevate Bradley to the next level?
I didn't even think he was the best player on Bradley. I'd say Rink Mast was better than him.
I absolutely agree. And like Antonio Reeves was, without question, an incredible player for the Redbirds and an incredible player in the Valley. And I guess all of our whining and moaning is not going to change the fact that he's not first team all conference, but it sucks for Redbirds fans who are trying to cling to something from this season.
Exactly. Even if you don't want to talk about takeover like context, just look at the statistics. I mean, the first three, Green and Mosley and Prim were all right there with Reeves. But Roberts and Williamson were both a good 6-7 points under him in comparable rebound and assist stats. So even if you don't want to think about the context, the statistics were better for Antonio Reeves.
I mean, you look at it where Reeves basically had to do everything. Because, look, he showed flashes of offensive potential his first 2 years here, but it was the defensive side of the court where he was really – where he'd go absent. But he improved his defensive play so much, his transition play, that I think that's where you look at it, why he was able to take that next leap. And granted, he was captain of the MVC Most Improved Team, which is certainly deserving because he wasn't even a consistent starter on last year's team. There would be fits where Dan wouldn't start him. So he did improve. Yes, he did. But also, he was one of the five best players in the Valley.
Yeah, no question. And he is on that second team all-conference, along with Noah Carter from UNI, Marcus Damask from Southern Illinois. But it's just, it's so frustrating. And it's even worse because you look at the season as a whole, and what do the Redbirds have to show for it, really? Unless tonight there is some magic that happens because we sleep in May.
Yeah.
It is March. But unless the Birds absolutely clobber Indiana State and then clobber UNI, it's like, what... It sucks.
And my thing about Reeves is like, we're going to do the show probably a lot in the next few weeks, but is this weekend the last time we see him in an ISU uniform? That could be it. So the fact that we saw him at his best in a Redbird uniform and it wasn't even good enough to be first team.
What does he have to stay for? That's the question.
I don't know why he'd
want to stay. It was Dan, I think, because he had a great relationship with Dan, apparently.
Exactly.
But why would, as a senior, or I don't know what you're going to call it, but as a fourth year player, how are you going to build a new relationship with a totally new head coach in this program? If you're going to go to a totally new head coach, go to a team competing for a championship.
That's the thing, because he's a junior right now, so he has 2 years of eligibility left. I know he has NBA aspirations. So what is the point of him staying here when he's not going to be getting any sort of national recognition? He doesn't have a relationship with whatever coach is coming in. And that's the whole problem. The whole problem with ISU is they're never able to keep good talent.
No.
And Antonio Reeves, unfortunately, I think is just going to be another example of that.
And it's the inconsistency with how the program's been. And that's something that Kyle Brennan's really going to have to nail down with this next hire. And I mean, we got to keep the show right on time so we could go to a whole nother segment on this. But, I could see Reeves, if he's going to transfer, I could see him going somewhere like DePaul or something like that. He's from Chicago. DePaul's a program on the rise. Like, that could be a good fit. And kind of like Javon Liberty Freeman transferred out of Valpo for that similar fit. Like, I could see that. I'm calling my shot there. Antonio Reeves is a Blue Demon next year. But, I talked about Liberty Freeman, talked about Valpo a little bit. When we come back, we're going to have a Valparaiso Sports Athletic Director and my former broadcast partner, Brandon Vickery, on the show. That's coming up next on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stalker, Joe Fire. For our next guest, we're joined by Brandon Vickery. He is the Assistant Director of Athletics for Media Relations at Valparaiso University. And this week, he's working with the men's basketball team for Arch Madness. So for our Arch-centric show, we're talking to an outside's perspective. But it's always great when we get to hear from someone around the Valley, especially for a big week like this. So, Brandon, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Leo. It's exciting to join you guys, and it's always exciting to talk about Arch Madness. I'm lucky to be here in St. Louis now for my third Arch Madness, and I never take it for granted. It's a fun week. It's a fun tournament. It's a great event with a lot of history, and I think, like a lot of years, there was a lot of uncertainty going into the tournament in terms of parity in the league, and it'll be fun to see what unfolds here in St. Louis over the next couple days.
And so you mentioned it. We're recording this on Wednesday. You guys are already in St. Louis. What did the couple days heading up to the tournament look like for you and the team?
It's a fun couple days, I think, in some senses, compared to other times of the year where the schedule is quite busy with the travel. Maybe you travel the day before the game, you get in the night before and kind of have a shoot around, eat dinner, get up the next day, and maybe go play a day game. I like to travel to St. Louis because we travel on Tuesday for a Thursday game. We did bus here, got the bus ride out of the way yesterday. And now for the team, it's a matter of kind of settling in, enjoying St. Louis a little bit. The weather is beautiful here. So these are a little bit of a relaxing few days, kind of the calm before the storm as everyone tries to get rested up for the conference tournament. From my standpoint, of course, this is a couple things happening at this time of year. One, the postseason awards for men's basketball, the lead into the conference tournament. And then also from my standpoint, working as an SID, you still have a number of other sports going on. So although it's peak men's basketball time, it's also crossover season with spring sports started. So it's a busy time of year, but I always look forward to this day in St. Louis. And I especially look forward to the few days last night and the day today, getting here, getting a little bit of time to enjoy St. Louis before things tip off. And then once we get going on Thursday night, it's pretty much nonstop basketball from there on out. And I certainly hope it's a busy weekend. And it was much like it was the year before last in 2020 when Valpo was fortunate enough to make a run to the title game.
And talking about a little bit of that calm before the storm, do you have any traditions or rituals that you like to do in St. Louis? Because it is kind of an interesting format where everybody in the Valley's in one place. So it's, you get to see a little bit of everybody. Is there anything you specifically look forward to before the tournament starts?
It's nice to see everyone from across the conference. You don't get that opportunity very often where everyone's in one place. We might have SID meetings over the course of the year. We might have media day where we come to St. Louis. But a lot of those events have been altered by COVID in the last year or two. So it's special when everyone from the conference is in one place and maybe you get a chance to interact with some of your peers at other institutions. I think as far as traditions, one that comes to mind just personally is our hotel, we're at the same hotel every year, is stationed fairly close to the arena within walking distance. Myself, our radio play-by-play broadcaster, our director of ops, and one of our assistant coaches kind of have a tradition of walking to all the games rather than taking the team bus. And we go early if there's a game taking place before ours. So that's a tradition that started the year we made the run to the championship game. And once you have success doing it one way, you want to keep it that way in the future. I recall, though, that year in particular, maybe we'll get into more of it, but the final day going into the championship game against Bradley, Valpo, as Illinois State fans may recall, had played on Thursday in the conference tournament that year and reached all the way to Sunday and played in the title game. It was the first team in the 30-year history of Arch Madness to make it to the championship game after playing in the opening game of the tournament. So I recall walking to the game that day and looking at our assistant coach and our Dobo and our radio broadcaster and just saying, while we were walking to the conference championship game, if we win today, we're going to the NCAA tournament. Kind of just those few minutes of walking into the arena, enjoying the weather, which typically is pretty good in St. Louis, at least compared to Valpo at this time of year. I always enjoy those walks over to practice or the walks over to the games.
So you guys are in a very similar spot this year that you were in that 2020 season. Are there any similarities in the team? Like, do you feel like you guys might have another conference title run in you?
I think so. I think there are some similarities in the sense that although the team was a 7 seed that year, I felt that the talent was maybe above that, or the potential was above that, and they were starting to peak at the right time. And although a tough loss to end the regular season against Bradley on Saturday night, for the most part, Valpo has played pretty well for the last 2 or 3 weeks, I think, and starting to show some signs of improvement. And I think you look up and down this roster, much like that one, there are dangerous players. The other similarity was that season, during the regular season, there had been some issues with health. the sharpshooter Ryan Fizikas had been down for a lot of the year with the injury. He came back late in that season. Javon Freeman Liberty, obviously Valpo's star player, had some illness issues right at the end and missed a couple games at the end of the regular season. There was some question if he would play in the opening game of the tournament. That's been a factor this year as well. There's been a long list of injuries, but you're starting to potentially get healthier, and there seems to be a good chance that Thomas Kithier will play in the tournament this weekend. He's been battling a back issue. So there's some similarities there in a couple regards, because both teams kind of getting healthier at tournament time, which is such a huge factor and can give you such a lift going into the tournament to get a key player or two back. And then also just the talent on the roster has the potential to make a run. You've seen it with Valpo beating Northern Iowa. You've seen it with Valpo bringing Loyola down to the wire twice. Valpo has fared well against top teams. I think Missouri State, should it come to fruition, is going to be a tough matchup in the second round. But first things first against Evansville on Thursday night. But I think that Valpo has the potential to maybe be a dark horse. And I do think that run 2 years ago gives hope to all the teams playing on Thursday, whether it's Valpo or Illinois State or someone else, that it can be done. And this year, although they're very, very good teams, the top of the conference, it is kind of wide open in the sense that there is not one powerhouse that is the clear favorite going into the weekend. So there could be some craziness in the Arch Madness bracket.
And you kind of touched on that a little bit, how even though there are some very good teams at the top, the Valley has seemed very even this year. It feels like anybody could beat anyone. You know, we like to kind of joke with the tagline about the Valley running deep, but it does seem to be the case this year that maybe for a Thursday night team like ISU or Valpo, they could go on that run. So I guess for this next question is, how deep does the Valley run this year? Because it looks like they may not be a two-bid conference this year, but it seems like if a team gets on the right mix in Arch Madness, they could be dangerous going into possibly the next tournament.
No doubt. And it's kind of a shame, because I think in some ways the talented teams in the conference at the top have beaten up on each other, and that has hurt at large chances for some of the teams. For example, Loyola, a team that going into conference play had a very strong non-conference resume and you felt had a very good chance to be an at-large team, but some of the really quality teams in the Valley handed them losses, and I think them going in as the four seed in the conference tournament makes it a long shot for them to get an at-large NCAA tournament berth. So I think in some ways the strength of the conference and the depth of the conference have been a challenge for the conference this year in that regard. You look at the top four teams all finishing within one game of each other, and I think that says it all in terms of the top there. And then not to mention the fact that Bradley is not even one of those top four teams, and we saw him up close and personal on Saturday night. I was there in Peoria, and as Valpo really struggled against that Bradley defense, and they're one of the better defensive teams perhaps nationally, or at least in the Midwest. And I think Bradley has a chance to give Loyola problems in that first game. And we know they've had success in March and years past, having won two of the last three MVC tournaments. So I think that there's a chance for it to run quite deep this year. It's going to be tough for those Thursday teams because the other teams are so good, and you have the disadvantage of having already played a game. You're not playing at even strength. The winner of Valpo and Evansville is going to take on a Missouri State team that will be rested on Friday. But there's still that potential, and it is March, and we've seen before that there can be some magic of March, and certainly all starts at Arch Madness. And the other thing that's fun is being one of the first conference tournaments of the entire year, and to have the national TV window on CBS on Sunday afternoon, and just kind of the mystique and the history of the whole tournament. So I look forward to seeing what unfolds all weekend long.
And there are probably not very many people who are as dialed into Missouri Valley Conference basketball as you are. And you mentioned how good those top five teams are. You could even throw Valpo and Southern Illinois in for that top seven of teams that feasibly could have a shot at going to the title game. Is there a team other than the Beacons that you look at and you're like, wow, I hope we don't see them. They're really scary.
I think that Missouri State is honestly a tough matchup, and that's the game that Valpo would play should they get past Evansville on Thursday night. You look at the two regular season matchups, and they were fairly lopsided in Missouri State's favor, and maybe the two teams that Valpo was least competitive against were Bradley and Missouri State in the regular season. And I think the star power of Missouri State Prim and Mosley and you know, Donovan Clay personally from him having played at Valpo and what he can do defensively and the depth of their team. I was a little surprised that Mosley wasn't named the MVC Player of the Year. Certainly AJ Green's an outstanding player, and there were two really strong candidates. I leaned a little bit in Mosley's direction, but perhaps a little bit of bias with the fact that he played so well against Valpo during the regular season matchups, where Green missed one of the games and did not play a huge factor in the other game against Valpo. So certainly a lot of standout players on all those teams. But I think one that's going to be a real challenge is that game against Missouri State. When you look at Friday, I think the winner of Valpo Evansville might have their work cut out for them in that game. If you can get past that, then it kind of breaks everything wide open. So that's certainly a dangerous team. And I already touched on Bradley, and they seem to always find a way in March. And they certainly have the talent to do it this year. And boy, is that a tough place to play, and what a home court advantage I feel like they had for the game on Saturday night. It was their senior night and just an outstanding crowd, great support. And we see that from so many different teams in the Valley, and certainly Illinois State is no exception with a very large and passionate fan base. And that's what makes it so fun to go around to each of these schools over the course of the season. I think we'll see some of that this weekend in St. Louis. So a lot of teams could be dangerous, but I do think a matchup that is a little bit of a scary one is the game against Missouri State on Friday from a Valpo standpoint. However, again, there's always the possibility of an upset in March.
And you touch a little bit on the Illinois State Valpo matchups. Both times they played this year, they went to overtime. Seems like in my 4 years here, every time the two teams meet, it's just gone down in the wire. What did you see from Illinois State this year? Because, I mean, we've talked about it a lot. This is a team that maybe hasn't lived up to its potential, but they could deliver quite a tough game when they are firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, I think some similarities between Valpo and Illinois State because of all the close games. And you talk about reasons why I'm optimistic for Valpo, and one that I didn't mention is how many close games were lost over the course of the regular season. The record can be very deceiving when you lose a handful of overtime games and you lose another handful of games on the final possession of regulation. The margin's razor thin there. And I think the same holds true to Illinois State. And you look across the entire conference, and it says a ton how many close games there were all season. And you think one bounce this way, one bounce that way, maybe a call goes this way, or a lucky break, or a player makes a free throw or misses a free throw on the opposing team, and you're talking about two or three or four games difference in the standings for each team in the conference. And I think there's not a single team that wasn't impacted by playing so many close games. So I think that's one thing with Illinois State that you can look at is the number of close games they played, and Valpo and Illinois State both playing so many overtime games over the course of the season. It tells you that they're right there. And I think that those teams are trying to figure out, how do you put away games right at the end? It's always challenging in the final few minutes. Maybe if you're up against one of these top few seeds and you have that opportunity, can you close out a win? Will be a question that we'll find out over the course of the weekend. But I think that Illinois State is a team that certainly has the ability. And we saw it with Valpo a few years ago. When you have the star power that Valpo had, and with Trevon Freeman Liberty, you have one player that can put the ball in the hole the way Illinois State does, as you guys know, that can make an impact in a game. And if you have a player that can score like that, that can take over a game, you're going to have a chance. And Illinois State has it with Reeves.
While we're talking about the Valley, some shakeups coming up. Loyola is leaving. We've got a couple teams coming in. And Valpo, you guys are kind of like the new guy on the block, right? The most recent addition. We've talked about it on our show, Murray State and Belmont coming in. But what's the reaction from a school that's only been in the conference 3 years? What do you guys think about the new teams coming in and Loyola on its way out?
Yeah, it'll be different to not be the new kid on the block any longer. With three new teams coming in, suddenly we're one of the more veteran teams in the Valley versus being the team that's kind of still getting used to the conference. It's exciting to add to the league. I think the conference office has done an outstanding job. The President's Council has done an outstanding job in identifying schools that are great fits for our conference. Excited to keep the Chicago market, Loyola moving on, but UIC coming in, and that allows us, from a Valpo standpoint, to have a nearby travel partner, a nearby, I hesitate to use the word rival because I don't know if it would rise to that level, but a nearby nearby foe that we've had a lot of history with. So one is moving out in Loyola, but one's moving in UIC. So that'll be exciting. And then for those other two programs are outstanding men's basketball programs in Murray State and Belmont. So I think that those are three great additions to the league. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. It'll be different to maybe experience a few new places on the road. I have not been to either Missouri State or Belmont. I will be at Missouri State, or I should say Murray State, here in a few weeks with baseball. But I'm looking forward to visiting both campuses. I think that both have passionate fan bases and fit well in the conference. And obviously we've played UIC numerous times, and I know that the Flames will be a nice fit as well. So overall, I think it's exciting for the league. Sometimes change can be challenging, but in this case, I think change can be a good thing. And so I look forward to seeing how that all plays out for the conference. And it's happened before. Look, Wichita State left, Creighton left. Those were two powerhouses in the league at that time. Then all of a sudden you have Loyola becomes a powerhouse. Drake becomes an at-large type team in the last few years. Other schools have stepped up. So whether it's the newcomers or whether it's the returning members, the conference has found a way to consistently be a team that is in talks for at-large bids at the very least each and every year. I think that'll continue going forward.
And just to round things out, you touched on baseball a little bit. Our relationships, obviously, we worked together with the Northwest Indiana Oilmen over the summer. And one of our most notable alums here at Illinois State, Paul DeYoung, played in the Midwest Collegiate League. Joey had actually interviewed him when the Cardinals caravan stopped in town a few years back. What do you remember about watching DeYoung as a college player that maybe led to him being the major league player he is now?
At that time, I'll be honest with you, I would not have looked out at the field and said that he was going to be the one to not only be a Major League Baseball player, but to be a big league all-star. It was 2013, so you're going back now nearly a decade at this point, and I had a chance to see DeYoung play. At that time, he was primarily a catcher, which is obviously different from what he ended up rising to the big leagues with. So to say that I saw a lot that I led to him being in the big leagues would be more of a falsehood, but I think it's a testament to his work ethic, to his resiliency. He went from a player who was certainly a good player in our league. He was an all-star in the Midwest Collegiate League in 2013, but was maybe not even one of the best players in that league, a top portion of the league, but probably not in the top three or four at that point. And to rise in that way, Illinois State, obviously a strong history of producing major league talent and a strong baseball tradition like so many of the schools in the conference have. So it was fun to get a chance to see him play. It was fun to follow him through the minors. I talked to him a few times via phone during his time in the minors and was always very nice with his time. And it was fun to follow his rise and to see what he's doing now. Although I'm, as a Cub fan, can't root against him, or I can't root for him all the time. But it's certainly been fun to follow Paul, and I think he's a great representative of the Missouri Valley Conference, which has churned out so many talented baseball players.
And hopefully we get to root for any sort of baseball, but that's a whole nother thing we'll get into later. But yikes. That MLB strike is looking rough.
Yeah, I hear you on that. You know, I look so forward to going on a few vacations each summer and visiting Major League Baseball parks. I'm not going to be too happy if I have to cancel my trips. So let's hope the owners and players get that figured out sooner rather than later.
All right, and that's all we have for you, Brandon. So thank you very much for your time. We wish you and Valparaiso the best of luck this week, and looking forward to seeing some kind of baseball this summer with the Oilmen at least.
Thanks, Leo. Looking forward to talking to you guys again down the road.
We'd like to thank Brandon for coming on the show, giving his perspective, telling some old stories. I was saying off air that the two people I've done probably the most on air work with in my career are Joey Dwyer and Brandon Vickery. So to hear them both in the same interview, it was weird because those are two people that I have great relationships with, but don't ever consider talking together. So hearing that.
It's great company. Great company to be in.
Of course. Joey Dwyer. Top two. Maybe two, though. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have more great company because Joe Kennedy and Andrew Avola are going to call in from St. Louis. They're going to talk to us here on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to the Red Zone only on 103.3 WZND.
Well, you heard what Dan said. This is the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, and Mikey Fernelli. And now we're going to talk to the guys at the Arch. Joe Kennedy, Andrew Avola. How's it going there, guys? Can you hear us?
Yo, yeah, what's up? How's it going?
Pretty good. Obviously, you guys made it to St. Louis. You know, you're at the Enterprise Center. How's the atmosphere there? First things first, what was the media meal? What were you guys smacking before you were about to go on air?
Well, they only gave us about just like a sandwich. Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't Chick-fil-A, so it was a little different than a couple years ago. But, I mean, the vibes are here. The vibes are going good. It is kind of what you would expect of a Thursday night game right now with the fans, but...
Yeah, I would say it's pretty good vibes in here. The energy, you can definitely feel it picking up. It's not as much, as Joe said, because of Thursday night, but still a lot of fans making their way into the stadium and getting settled in.
So how does the atmosphere look, Indiana State versus Illinois State? You see more blue or red?
I would say more red.
All right. Any notable fans there? Because when we went to Purdue, it was like a bingo card of Illinois State notable people. We saw TGK. We saw Kyle Brennan.
Dan Muller.
Baseball team. Yeah, we saw
Dan Muller.
Yeah. So you seeing anybody, any celebrities there? Craig Robinson, maybe?
I haven't seen any celebrities, but I have seen a good amount of just, like, people from Illinois State, alums even, and a couple of WZND people. Maddie Artman's here right now, so
she's on the dance
squad. So it's good to see her, check in. And, I mean, the vibes are being great right now. I just feel both teams, Indiana State's wearing their throwback uniforms, Birds in their all white, all wearing new merch as well. So everyone's all decked out.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the conference tournament postseason we talked about, you mentioned that new warm-ups we see with the Redbird, the white long sleeves, and I believe it says no quit on it or will to win, something of that nature. But they look pretty sharp out there on the Birds, but the energy is picking up, you know, 7.5 minutes till tip-off, and you know, I'm excited to be here.
So you guys are in St. Louis, the home of the Valley. Everyone else is there. All the teams are there, all the coaches. What do you expect about this tournament? I mean, this field for the Valley, it has four teams on top within a game of each other. I mean, what could we expect? Is this going to be a tournament for the ages?
I think it's going to be crazy. I hope it's something like 2 years ago where we had Valpo as a 7 seed and against Bradley in a 4 seed. I mean, 1 through 4, you could easily say the four seeds can win this, even throwing in Bradley as well. But it's going to be a fun one, and starting things off with Illinois State, it's even better.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely an interesting field. Like you said, Joe, the top four teams, you could say any of those would win, and you would include Bradley in that. But I feel like even the bottom-tier teams can really give some of these top-tier teams a run for their money in, you know, the quarterfinals or semifinals. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how things shake out, because I feel like, you know, anywhere from the 7 to 9 seeds can really make some noise and win a game or two.
Yeah.
All right, so guys, talk me into it, because we just had Brandon talking about how his team in 2020 was a Thursday night team, won all the way to the championship.
Exactly.
Why are the Birds going to do it this year? Talk me into
it. I mean, just look at their offense. You take a look at their offense, it's one of the best in the Missouri Valley Conference. And when it comes to March, and it comes to teams being successful in March, you obviously need some defense, but there's certain instances where teams just light up the scoreboard. Illinois State might win 85-83, but it's just about putting up points, and I feel like that's the way that the Birds can do it.
And, you know, this team also has been through a lot of adversity this year. We talk about, obviously, Dan Muller, the departure of him, and losing Cy Chapman, one of their key starters in the middle of the season. This team's been through a lot, and they, you know, coming together here towards the end of the year, you know, playing for one goal, obviously, to get to the NCAA tournament. Yeah. They can make some noise and, you know, maybe reach Sunday if they play well enough.
And they also just got nothing to lose right now, I believe, as well. I mean, like Andrew was just saying, coach is gone. No one really expects them to do anything, so they might just come into this tournament and just say, you know what, screw it. Let's just whip something up, and maybe it'll happen.
All right, so, boys, you're talking us into the Redbirds. Who are we listening for? Who's going to be the big guy to step up and get the Redbirds past the Sycamores?
I mean, how could you not talk about Antonio Reeves? He's the leader on this team, the leading scorer in the Valley, 17th leading scorer in the country, and you know, he's been the guy all year long, and the Redbirds are going to need him to play well here in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament in St. Louis in order for them to have success.
And another one that I want to look at is Mark Freeman, number 0, and then Xavier Bledsoe, number 0 for Indiana State. Both are guards that can pass the ball around and spread it around. Mark Freeman on Saturday against Indiana State had 17 points and 6 assists, so he was really spreading the rock around. And if the Birds do want to be successful here, they're going to need more than just Antonio Reeves, plus probably Antonio Reeves dropping about 30-plus, but they're going to need a platoon of people.
All right, Joe Kennedy, did you practice a big buzzer beater game win call? For don't give it away, but do you have it?
Oh, you know I have. I've been waiting for this moment for about four years now, calling a game here at Arch Madness live. So, I mean, the possibilities have been flowing through my head the past four seasons.
You heard it here from Joe Kennedy. Stay tuned. I'm going to have a big call for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Boys, thank you so much for coming on. We're getting another call, so I got to let you go. We're driving through a tunnel, actually.
Calling.
Yeah, so but we'll hear from you soon. Thanks, gentlemen.
All right, sounds good.
Sounds good.
And that was Joe Kennedy and Andrew Avola live at Arch Madness. We're going to hear from them in just a little bit. But until then, that's all the time we have for the Red Zone. Man, this was a great show. We only have a few of these left, but it was always great when it's Arch Madness season, when we're getting the atmosphere for one of the best conference tournaments in the nation. It's a shame, Joey and I, we couldn't be there after being there 2 years ago, but it's great to still be part of it like we were tonight.
And the best thing is, we've got Arch Madness starting tonight, and then in a couple weeks, we've got March Madness. And that is going to be, boys, I'm bringing it. I retired the word after March Madness last year. It's coming back. It's going to be electric. I'm so excited. The word has come out of retirement.
When do we sleep, Joey?
We sleep in May.
We'd like to thank all of our guests tonight for Joe Kennedy, Andrew Avola, Brandon Vickery for coming on. If you miss any part of tonight's show, we're going to have it on podcast form in just a little bit. That's all we have for the Red Zone. Stick around for tip-off between the Redbirds and the Sycamores on 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.